The Midweek Horror Podcast is supported by Horrified, the website that celebrates and champions British horror, covering films, television, books, fiction, and more. You can visit Horrified at horrifiedmagazine.co.uk and find them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Horrified Mag.
This is the Midweek Horror Podcast with Hannah Fox and Ellis Reed.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the Midweek Horror Podcast. I'm Hannah Fox.
And I'm Ellis Reed.
Was that a bit too jazzy?
No, I like that. We took a little break. It was a little longer than we anticipated because I think we just forgot we had a podcast over Christmas.
Yeah, sure, we've got a podcast. Forgot about that. But no, it's good to be back.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited that we're back and doing a podcast.
As am I.
Because I love our little podcast. I love it.
Me too. I've missed it, actually. Like, you know, we joke and say we forgot, but actually I was thinking of it fondly and thinking I can't wait to start in the new year. So, yeah.
It's just such a shame we can't be in person doing it with the film, watching it together.
I know. Because that was a big part of it, with all the snacks,
yeah.
Our endless sacks of snacks and Pepsi yeah. Max. God, I'm a poet and I don't know it, seriously.
Calm down, Dr. Seuss. on the pizza.
Oh.
I've not had a Papa John's, I don't think, since the last time I watched a film with you.
God, I think me and Em had one, but it wasn't the same.
No.
It wasn't the same. We couldn't replicate it.
The other reason I'm really excited is because we've got a brilliant film to talk about.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that because I feel very much the same about this one. Maybe showing my hand a bit early, but no, really enjoyed this.
So this was Saint Maud, which is, I think it's fair to say, the most critically acclaimed British horror film to come out in a long time.
Yeah.
Written and directed by Rose Glass, and it stars Morvith Clark as Maud and Jennifer Ely as Amanda, a retired dancer who's living by the sea, and she's dying. I can't remember if it ever says what she's dying of, but I just assumed it was cancer.
It says she's got a lymphoma. I don't know if they go into specifics, but it's some kind of cancer, yeah.
Maud is her carer, and it's clear from the outset that Maud is a very devout Christian who believes she has a very vivid and real relationship with God, and she becomes obsessed with saving Amanda's soul. And I think that's a pretty fair, spoiler-free synopsis of the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good little spoiler-free intro.
By the way, did you notice I had a go at pronouncing Morvith properly?
I was very impressed, actually, because I had no idea. I was going to say something Welsh, maybe?
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, I thought I'd better Google that. You know, I don't want to disrespect the performance by mangling her name.
No, and we don't want to put off our Welsh followers either, you know.
No, yeah. And I found a website that was about how to pronounce words, and it had an entry for it. So I clicked on the entry, and it just said, Morfid.
Oh.
And I thought, I don't believe you. Like, don't just guess. You can't set yourself up as a website telling people, oh yeah, I'll tell you how to pronounce it. Give it here, I'll sound it out. Looks like Morfid, mate. that'll do.
Love it.
So what did you think?
I really enjoyed it, actually. What I liked about it, spoiler free, was that it was, I thought, very original. It wasn't, it is sort of some that sort of film I haven't seen. I haven't seen anything quite like it in a while. And it was the kind of film I enjoy because you're not really sure what's going to happen and what's going on. And there were some, a fair few sort of twists and turns throughout. I also like the fact that it sort of seemed like, in the beginning, it was almost like it was in another time. And actually, it was quite interesting when she's in her sort of little very basic nurse outfit. And when she walked, the first time she sort of walked past the seafront prom, past the arcades, I was like, oh yeah, it's modern day. But because of how they presented Maud, it was almost like we were looking at, you know, kind of going back in time a little bit.
Yeah. I'll have a bit more to say about that in the spoiler section, actually. But yeah, I totally agree. I thought that was really interesting the way they did that. I found the central performance, I found the character of Maud very sad and very affecting.
Yes.
There's one particular scene where she sat in a toilet in a bar, which I just found devastatingly sad. Just her delivery of it and the acting. You know, that sort of a drunk phone call.
Oh, God, yeah. The desperation.
Yeah, really, really sad.
I think it was that thing where it was like someone really not having a friend in the world. And I don't think it's spoilers to say that, so much so that she's calling someone who she barely knows to you know, keep her company.
Yeah.
And even that person isn't available to her. And, yeah, you just... I found I had extreme empathy for her.
Yeah.
You know, whatever she was doing, however bad things got, I always felt sorry for her the whole way through and like I wanted to help her out somehow.
Yeah. I think, you know, it was one of those horror films where my main emotional engagement with the film wasn't horror. It was just sadness on behalf of somebody else. I mean, there were certainly scary bits, but my overwhelming emotion was just feeling bad for the character of Maud. It was very, very sad.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I thought the film, the way it was shot, I thought there were some really clever, memorable scenes. Stuff like there's a scene where Maud is drunkenly walking home and she's sort of swaying on her feet as she walks down. She walks through a tunnel under a bridge or something. And they've shot it at a 90 degrees angle. And it's really disorientating, but it isn't pretentious. It's just a really effective visual representation of what it's like, you know, when you're absolutely hammered walking home, trying to keep upright.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's quite a few moments like that, you know, just really, really clever ways of showing things. That I found really... Oh, there's a scene with fireworks as well, which is just beautiful.
Oh, I love that. That was absolutely stunning. Yeah.
We can maybe talk about that more in spoilers, that one.
Definitely. I mean, it was shot beautifully. There's some fantastic imagery. I mean, the obvious one is the religious imagery throughout, and there's so much of that. I mean, the way they dress her, some point she's dressed like a saint. Some point she's sort of dressed like Jesus, and when she sort of wraps the almost like the bed sheet around her and has the crucifix on, and there's a lot of things sort of relating to, like, there's a part, and I don't think this is really spoiler to say, she's sort of self-harming a few times, and it's almost, you know, sort of quite it's like stigmata, that sort of thing, you know, when she's pushing the nails into her feet. And there was another bit which I think she had sort of blood trickling down her head, which really made me think of sort of Jesus and the crown of thorns.
Ooh, I don't remember that.
I hope I haven't just made that up. I was just like, there was a definite bit which did make me think of that.
Yeah, I don't doubt you. I'm not making an accusation.
No. I was trying to remember which bit it was in, but anyway, yeah, lots of like really nicely shot religious imagery.
Yeah. Jennifer Reilly was really good as well.
Yes. Oh yeah, she was great. very much like got into that role as the kind of spoilt celebrity, and now it's almost gone a little bit wrong. And again, she's a very sad character as well. Very sad character, you know, having to sort of almost pay people or, you know, entice them to spend time with her, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, she does sort of seem to have a lot of friends, but you do feel like, you know, she is a lonely character.
Yeah, probably quite superficial friendships.
Yes, yeah. Well, her sort of like love interest, she's, you know, like paying to sleep with her, which is just, you know, quite sad in itself.
Yeah, yeah. Funnily enough, this was the first thing I've seen Jennifer Ely in since Pride and Prejudice in the 90s.
Yeah, same, actually. Yeah, it's been a long time. And I didn't know whether that was because I just hadn't seen her in anything or she hasn't been in anything for a while.
I don't know, actually, but it was really weird hearing her with her native accent because, of course, in Pride and Prejudice, she's playing British.
Very British, yeah. She's Elizabeth Bennet, isn't she?
Yes, she is, yeah. The star opposite Colin Firth.
Mr. Darcy.
Yeah.
Colin Firth, yeah.
oh, my word. Now she's done loads of stuff. She's been working continually.
Has she?
Yeah, yeah.
God, how come we've missed her? What have we been doing?
She was in Contagion, Zero Dark Thirty, the RoboCop remake. Fifty Shades of Grey.
Was she?
Wait, whoa.
The cheeky thing.
Oh, and 50 Shades Freed, so it was a recurring character.
Oh, they liked her so much they brought her back, yeah. Mm.
So I guess it's just our paths haven't crossed since Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know, I thought she did a really good performance as well.
Yeah, no, she was fantastic. I mean, all the cast were very good, I think. I think the friend of Maud's, I mean, the kind of, I say friend, it was more of like a colleague of Maud's, was very believable.
Mm.
Kind of, they had the sort of like awkward friendship and she's trying her best to be a good friend to her, but she, you know, because of the way that Maud is, that's quite difficult for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Maud's gone way beyond.
Yeah, she's trying to help, but she can't do a lot for her.
Yeah, yeah. And Joy, her name is, isn't it?
Joy, that's it, yeah.
She's at the level of help where it's sort of like awkwardly going round and saying, oh, well, you know, good to see you. And, you know, Maud needs a professional intervention, really. Joy's not going to cut it.
That's true.
I think we should go to spoilers so we can go nuts and really talk about all the stuff we loved.
I would like to as well, definitely, because there's so much to get into with this one. And there's also another character I would like to discuss that we can't really discuss now. So, yeah, let's do it.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
I can't wait to see who that is. At first,
surprise!
Should we give it a stars rating?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 5 stars. I mean, it's a stone cold 5 for me. I loved it.
So I would say, no, screw it. I'm the same. I was trying to be different there, but no, I love it as well. I think initially, actually, when I first watched it, I was a bit like, maybe 4.5, because, you know, I think there were bits they could have delved into more. But actually, on reflection, I think it's a really nice little film as it is. I don't think it needs more.
Funnily enough, my only real criticism, it now normally I like my favourite length for a horror film is 80 minutes.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Actually, when I'm looking for films on IMDb, I look at the runtime, and like I'll happily sit through a 3-hour Lord of the Rings. But if it's a horror film and I see even 1.75 hours, I normally think, oh, do I want to invest that much time? But this is the one case where I would have just liked more of it. I would have liked it to be longer.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see just more of the same.
That was the same with me. That was my only criticism and why I would have maybe slightly knocked it down. But on reflection, I don't think that's fair, because you can't say, I won't give this 5 stars because I enjoyed it that much. I wanted more.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think her relationship with Amanda was so interesting, and I loved that, and how they went back and forth, and I think I could have done with more of that. A bit more evolution there would have been lovely.
That's exactly it, actually. If I would have made it longer, that's where all the extra material would have gone. All right, so it's 5 stars from the Midweek Horror Podcast. Before we go to the jingle, I've missed the jingle, you know.
I know, me too.
All our various jingles. I'm going to have fun editing them into this podcast. Before we go to the jingle, what I will say to anyone listening, so sometimes I like listen to a podcast with spoilers for a film I've not seen, because I'm just quite interested to hear about the film, and I think that I might not even see the film. But in this case, if you haven't seen St. Maud, I think it would be a real shame to spoil it for yourself. So go watch it and come back.
Go watch it. It's worth it. It's, you know, it won't be a waste of your 80 minutes.
Absolutely not, no. And then you can follow us to the other side of the jingle.
The character I wanted to bring up was, of course, Katie.
Yeah.
Because what I loved about this film, Maud and Katie, although one person, to me, were such separate characters. I loved that.
Yeah.
That was one of the best bits in the film for me, when she stopped being Maud and got a bit disillusioned with religion and had that night out being Katie.
She'd gone back to being Katie. So
love that.
Yeah. So what I wanted to say before, but I held it back for this section, is when you said that when you first meet Maud, it almost feels like a period piece.
Yeah.
Because she's sort of like this funny, fussy, very religious, conservative person.
Like an older lady almost.
Yeah, yeah. Old before a time.
Yeah.
And this is like a sort of persona she's created around her.
Yeah.
So what we learn is that she used to be a nurse, and she was a bit of a good time girl. You know, she liked to go out and go clubbing and stuff. And then there was some terrible accident at work, which led to her having a bit of a breakdown. And she discovered God, became a born-again Christian, and invented this persona of Maud for herself. And it's not until she bumps into Joy, who calls her Katie. And then, like you say, later on, she gets briefly disillusioned with religion and reverts to being Katie, that we realise just how much Maud is a fabrication. It's a creation. It's like her idea of what a devout Christian should be like.
Yes. Like what she's seen on the TV or whatever, you know, she's...
Yeah, yeah.
She's following that. It's not something that's evolved slowly. It wasn't something she's learnt from being young. It's the way that she feels she should be. So she's being very, very strict on herself.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where it's not modern, is it? The way that she's living. It's all very basic. Like I mentioned earlier, the kind of self-abuse. Very much feels like another time, or as if she were a nun or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was I love that contrast.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when Katie is on the night out, and again, such a sad, you know, few scenes when she's in that pub nursing her pint, trying to get people to like her, you know, trying to kind of get in with the group of laughing friends at the table, and, you know, sort of doing these sexual favors for guys to try and be liked, but her heart's not in it at all. You just feel like so sad for her, because as Maud or as Katie, she's not happy in either role, really.
Yeah,
but I just loved how she was so different. That was, you know, I thought was brilliant.
No, I loved that as well. So the reason, obviously the reason she's become disillusioned with God, who she talks to in her head every day and sometimes out loud, is because she's actually been sacked from being Amanda's carer. And she has a crisis of faith, which leads to her getting drunk and going out on the pull. And when she gets home, this is the fireworks scene, when she gets home, she pukes. And then has a sort of fit. Now, she has fits throughout the film. I don't know whether they're, you know, psychologically induced or whether she has an actual epileptic condition. But she has her most dramatic fit of the film. And she's lying on her back with a back arch, and she rises into the air, doesn't she? And it's all done in slow motion.
Scene.
And there's fireworks outside. That is an absolutely stunning scene.
Stunning. They did that so well. Beautifully shot.
I was just going to say, I might as well quickly list them now, actually. My favourite visuals, is we've done two of them. We've done the sideways tunnel.
Yeah.
We've done the floating up into the air with fireworks. Two other visuals I really, really liked. One was just the bubbling lava tomato soup at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think the reason I really liked that was because it just looked so weird and so lurid that I sort of thought, oh, this is going to be quite cool, actually. There's going to be some interesting visuals in this film. But another one I loved was towards the end. So obviously she goes back and ends up killing Amanda.
Mm.
When she's leaving the house, the camera pans up and reveals the moon just looking almost terrifyingly big in the sky.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that bit, yeah.
And it's just so eerie and not quite right. I thought that was, again, a really clever way of just emphasising that the world that Maud's moving in isn't quite the real world. She's off in her own little world.
Isn't quite right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I wonder how they did that, actually. I wonder if they sort of composited it on a computer, or if they just filmed her from miles away on, like, a tele-zoom lens.
I reckon that was done on computer, because it was massive, wasn't it? But I don't know. But it had a very, yeah, it was a very beautiful effect. It was quite weird.
Yeah, yeah.
I also like the, I mean, it's an obvious one, but when she's on the beach and she sets herself alight, the, again, the contrast of being, she's imagining herself as a sort of angel descending into heaven with all these followers bowing before her, and then you get this one really quick shot of her actually on fire.
Screaming,
and the contrast
yeah.
of that is great.
Yeah.
Screaming. Yeah, it's almost like heaven and hell,
yeah.
you know, kind of combining. Yeah, love that shot.
So that, of course, is the end. After she's killed Amanda, she gets her stuff together and she dresses herself up like a saint, and she thinks she's got wings, you know. You see her looking around at her golden wings, and then she goes onto the beach and she douses herself in, I forget what it is. Is it
petrol or something?
It's not petrol, is it? Peroxide. Is peroxide flammable?
Oh, might be peroxide.
It's summer. And then she sets fire to herself. And like you say, she in her head, she looks up and she can see like a vortex in the clouds that she's going to rise through. It's a very, very sad ending.
Yeah. But then it's a very, very sad tale, isn't it? Her whole life seems to be sad.
Yeah.
And I think this descent into this sort of mental breakdown, you know, it just seems to sort of like get worse and worse. And although, yes, it's a very sad ending, it's almost like, well, it makes sense, because that's almost like what you feel like the whole film's going yeah. towards. It's not going to get better for her. You never get a sense it's going to get better for her. And I think once Amanda is killed, you just know she's not going to have a happy ending, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned the fits and talking about the mental breakdown and the hallucinations and things. I did wonder whether, you know, obviously we've got Amanda being ill with some sort of cancer. I wondered whether, you know, Maud also is actually quite ill with something, you know, like a brain tumour, or there's something very wrong with her.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
The fits don't seem quite right. And obviously she kind of talks about these feelings she's having, and they're so powerful, very physical. And it's like, yeah, is she actually just very, well, she's obviously mentally unwell, but is she
yeah,
also actually
yeah.
very physically unwell and just not aware of it?
Yeah.
So interesting.
Well, funnily enough, I was about to say, before you said it was interesting that I mentioned the fits, I was going to say it was interesting that you mentioned her killing Amanda. And I think they make a very...
It's because we're both so interesting, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah, we're both totally interested in each other. Something that I thought made a very interesting contrast in terms of the approach to horror. So for almost the total runtime of the film, the horror is more the kind of unsettling, mounting feeling of an ease, just there's something like, and her fits to me are kind of creepy, but it's not like, you know, there's that scene where she's walking up the stairs and you can tell she's about to have one of her fits because she almost looks a bit sort of orgasmic.
Mm.
But every time she has one, she sort of arches her neck and just opens her mouth really, really wide in a way that's just, yeah, visually quite unsettling. Like, she just opens her mouth a bit wider than is normal.
Yeah.
Even when you're opening your mouth.
Yes.
And that's definitely creepy. And that, for me, set my expectations of the horror.
Ah, that's interesting.
I thought it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a bit unsettling and make you feel, oh, that's not, that's a bit weird. And then so the scene where she kills Amanda was so unexpected, I absolutely shat my pants. I mean, obviously, it's all in Maud's head. But when there's that jump scare where Amanda turns into a demon... After the established tone of the film, that to me was so unexpected, it really made me jump.
It was a very fast scene as well, wasn't it? You went from this quite slow pace to this very kind of quite rapid scene.
Yeah, like out of context, that could have been in any sort of Hollywood religious horror film. It could have been in, it could have been in the next Conjuring film.
Mm.
But what made it so effective, I think, was... Prior to that, the horror had been based more around just worrying what somebody was going to do and feeling uncomfortable about their clearly not right behaviour. I wasn't expecting a demon to show up. You know, even a hallucinated demon.
No, even at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was really good. It was very very different to the rest of the film. Which was nice. Like you say, it was unexpected.
Did it make you jump?
I don't know if it made me jump, but it certainly made me go, oh, like, I wasn't expecting that. Like you said, I didn't expect it to become a demon. In fact, I think when I started watching the film, I was expecting it to be a bit more like Misery or something like that. Mm. So she's, I think with the whole taking care of this woman and their relationship, and I thought, oh, is she going to go a bit dark on her and, you know, do things to her or something, but no, very, you know, it did keep you guessing the whole way through.
So you know I like supernatural horror.
Mm.
So to me, the fact that, so I think it's quite unambiguous, Maud is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Maud is mentally ill.
She's mentally ill.
Yeah.
Or ill in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the supernatural stuff isn't real, it's all in her head. But even so, I watched it and enjoyed it as a supernatural horror, just because of the mood and the visuals. It's got that feeling. It feels like a supernatural horror, even though, you know, it's all in Maud's head.
Yeah, yeah. I think I didn't think that, but I, now you've said it, I do get where you're coming from, especially with the bits, like you said, with Amanda becoming the demon. And there's, I think, the hallucinations, actually, you know, things like the big, watching the beetle walking across, and it's just all a bit kind of creepy and eerie, and yeah, then you have these scenes of quite bizarre imagery.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you like supernatural horror films, you will probably love the tone and the mood of this, even though it's not, on paper, it's not a supernatural horror film.
No, I totally get that. I think it's a sort of film actually quite a lot of people would enjoy, because it doesn't necessarily fit into just one category. You know, you could also say it's a more of like a sort of suspense thriller or something than a horror, even. I mean, yeah, it could fit into sort of a few different boxes, I think.
It's easier when you don't like a film, because then you can take the piss out of it. You can take the piss out of it all night.
Oh, I know. That's true, actually, because usually we don't hold back on that. but, yeah, there's not really a lot to say on the other side. And I think, like I said, the only thing I really thought was that I felt like we could have done with a bit more exploration, but, I mean...
I guess before she gets sacked, that whole phase where... her and Amanda are getting on, that could have been longer.
Oh, yeah.
It felt like we sort of montaged our way through that quite quickly, and then she was falling out with her.
Yeah, because they started to have this really quite sweet little relationship, like when they were praying together, and Amanda's giving it lip service, but she quite likes that she's got this nice little girl as a bit of company.
Yeah.
And they're sort of being quite good for each other, but that wasn't, there wasn't very much of that. It was all quite quick. And then the lover, I think her name is Carol or Caroline, she comes back in and sort of spoils that a bit, because she tells her what, she tells Amanda that Maud has tried to put her off, and that sort of sours that somewhat. And then yeah. of course we had the party where they make fun of Maud and it goes downhill. But I agree with you, I think there definitely could have been more of that really sweet relationship between the two of them, just to kind of, then I think it would have been all the more sort of distressing, and maybe he had even more punch when it all kind of goes wrong.
Yeah.
You know.
I actually think Amanda was really surprisingly forgiving of Maud at a couple of points.
Mm.
So first of all, Maud, because she's saving her soul, her lover, Carol, who she's paying, she basically tries to warn her off, and she says, you know, you're bad. You're bad for Amanda. She doesn't need you now. You know, she's got to focus on God or whatever.
Mm.
And Carol phones Amanda and tells her this has happened. Amanda then has the party where she invites Carol and makes a point of saying in earshot of Maud, do you know she tried to scare Carol off? I don't know if she's a bigot or jealous. And then they have a little conversation. And then Amanda's like going, oh, don't listen to me, darling. You know, don't pay any attention to what I say. She sort of like tries to make friends with her again.
Yeah.
And I think that is astonishingly generous of character.
Yeah,
considering,
true.
You know, she did try to end your relationship behind your back. And then, she says something which Maud doesn't like, so Maud slaps her and gives her a bloody nose. So next, Amanda doesn't involve the police. She just gets her sacked, but she doesn't press charges. Then at the end of the film, when Maud lets herself into Amanda's house, Amanda's all like, oh, Maud, I'm so sorry. I was unkind to you.
I know. She's like, no worries, babe. It's fine. You know, come on. It's, it was quite, that's true, actually. She was quite forgiving.
Rather than get out of my house.
Yeah. You sort of think Amanda's a bit of a bitch in places, but actually, Maud is very interfering, and it's not her place as a carer to do all those things. But actually, you reminded me when you said about her confronting Carol. That, I think, is the first time we really glimpse Katie when she says
Katie,
something.
Yes.
Yeah, when she says, I don't care if you had an 8-inch cock or whatever. And you're like, oh, I didn't expect that to come out of Maud's mouth.
When they
have that confrontation scene.
It's worse than that. It's worse than that. I think she made it 10 inches.
See, did she? Did I?
I think she said,
did I undersell it?
I would have to rewatch it. I think she said, I don't care if you've got a 10-inch cock. But you're right, that is a little flash of the Katie character that was her past self that she's tried to erase by changing her name.
Yeah.
You're quite right. You're exactly right. That's the first glimpse we see that there's more to Maud than she's putting out on the surface.
Yeah, because I remember going, oh, okay, you know, like, feisty you are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was interesting. So, yeah, so many little nice bits. Yeah. Another thing, I had a quick look through a couple of articles on this after I watched it, just because I was interested. And I found it really interesting that quite a few writers have compared it to Taxi Driver as well, sort of citing Taxi Driver. Well, as the way that, so I think the sort of being able to be like objective, the one character being objective and subjective, I think the way that, and I think in this, it's because she is almost like two characters. So she can almost like look at her two lives while being these two characters, if that makes sense. It probably doesn't at all. But I thought that was quite interesting that quite a few articles have said that was a big influence, Taxi Driver, or they suspect.
How fun. Do you know, I've never seen Taxi Driver.
Oh, it's good. That is a good film, worth a watch.
That's the Robert De Niro one, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Quite a few years old now, but I think if you watched it, you'd see what I'm trying to say, actually. And I would never have thought of that until I read it, and I thought, oh, I can sort of see why they've gone for that.
I guess. So is there something about how Robert De Niro's character is just completely at the bottom? You know, he's isolated.
Yeah, it's a very lonely...
He's got nowhere to turn.
Yeah, it's... and it's almost like these people aren't necessarily good, but again, it's the empathy thing. You feel empathy for them because they're a little bit lost, a little bit kind of clueless.
Complete, another bit of a non sequitur, but talking about Katie versus Maud, something that I thought afterwards, if you were one of the guys she'd had a dalliance with on that night.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like say the guy she togged off by the fire exit. How bad would you feel when you found out what had happened later?
Oh, shit, you'd be like, yeah.
Hey, mate, you know that girl who wanked you off the other night? Yeah.
Killed
herself. She set herself on fire. What? Why?
Well, I don't know. You might feel worse if you were the other guy that she was shagging, because you might think, God, was I that bad? I mean, you know, there's no need for that, is there, really?
Oh, do you know, I'd forgot about that scene because...
He was horrible to her as well.
Yeah, he was. He was a dick. The other guy was a dick as well. I was remembering this film as a film with a lot of sort of eerie build-up, like the weird fits she was having and stuff, and then one really solid, terrifying scare at the end. But actually, the scene where she's on top of him and she has a flashback to... defibrillators crushing into his ribcage.
That
was another pretty terrifying bit as well, because again, it was so unexpected.
I feel like I need to watch it again, actually, like, because I think those bits that I not missed, but I've forgotten already, and yeah, it's a good bit. Another random fact, actually, which I was like,
oh, let's have it.
It was filmed in Scarborough. You know, so one of the more... some people say the Vegas of the UK, so, you know, exciting location there.
It's, it feels like Scarborough,
it does feel
it?
Like Scarborough, yeah, it really does. I wasn't surprised.
Yeah. Should we do the Rotten Tomatoes game? We've not been able to do that for ages.
Oh, we haven't. Oh, let me find it. You know, I still don't know how it works, really, but I'll do my best. Just so I can talk about the tomatometer, which we all know is my favourite thing to do in these podcasts.
Oh, the tomatometer. I've missed the tomatometer.
Now, okay, so I haven't looked, but I've got it up. Got it up ready. So, are we going for...
Who should guess first?
Tell you what, you go first.
96%.
Is this on the... just the tomatometer?
The tomatometer.
Your tomatometer. Okay, 96. I'm going to go... I think it'll be high. I'm going to go 94, just because there's always some people who don't like this sort of thing.
Oh, wow. It's...
what is it?
It's anyone's game.
Okay, you ready? Drum roll, please. 91%.
91%?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, at least it was in the 90s.
It was in the 90s.
Well, I thought it deserved more. Well, I can't wait to hear a negative review.
Oh, you know, I love a negative review.
Yeah, yeah.
My favourite things. Right, oh, a splodge. Got a splodge up already.
Yeah, let's start with a splodge.
This is from a top critic. So this is Richard Brody from The New Yorker. And Richard says, in providing the jolts that Maud's terrifying actions and fantasies provide, rather than the taut and complex web of life that they wrench apart, the movie suggests less interest in Maud than the images of Maud, which as a result feel nearly empty. Sounds very pretentious, to be honest. And it wasn't really the review I was after.
Yeah, that's not really resonating with me.
No, I'm a bit like, hang on, what did I just read? Do you know what I mean? Right, let's find another one. the better splodge.
I mean, I think the hollowness of the Maud character is a really interesting, like we've talked about that, really interesting aspect of the film. It's like a facade that she's put up to try and erase the real her and distance herself from her past, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, take that, New Yorker.
Okay, what else we got?
Let's have another splodge.
Oh, hang on. What lets St. Maud down most is its screenplay more than its own buzz. Good as Clark is, her performance can't make up for Maud's one-dimensionality in the absence of a proper arc. Again, I that was Andy Crump from from Paste magazine. I mean, I don't know whether this is tooth or wallpaper or crab. I mean, I just don't know.
just generic paste. Generic
paste. I mean, I think they love all pastes in this magazine.
What were the options you provided? Tooth or wallpaper?
Or
what
crab.
Was the other one? Yeah, crab. I was going to say tuna mayonnaise paste.
Love a bit which of crab I love. Paste. Oh, yeah. I haven't had that in a while.
Maybe we should subscribe to the magazine.
Maybe we should. Yeah, I'm going to have a look into that. We've got...
Do you reckon the magazine is like... The review of the film was just a complete aside. It was... this week we tried Shipham's new formulation of beef paste. Before I tell you about that, I saw a film the other day.
All right, here's one. Okay, Nate Adams from The Only Critic. Well, you're not, are you, love? So fine, but okay. You can imagine how surprised I was that Rose Glass... St. Maud was another lagging horror exercise. That sense of dread plays out for 84 grueling minutes with minimal payoff. Wow. But he did mention the 84 minutes, so clearly he...
Does he realise that Rose Glass is not St.
I know,
Maud?
I was thinking that. I was... because... I was... Was he trying to refer to... Well, I can't say it. You say it. Morwen. What's her name?
It's not Morwen. Morveth.
Morveth.
Although I'm not saying it very well, to be honest. It sounds quite harsh when I say it, but it's actually quite a soft. Basically, I found her saying it, because after I saw the website, it was like, oh, don't worry, mate, just say Morfid. You'll be fine. After I moved away from that dubious website, I looked on YouTube, and she'd done a video talking about Welsh slang, and she introduced herself by name at the start of that. So I've tried to copy that as well as I can.
Well, I think you do a stellar job on it. I really do. Also, I said that wrong. So sorry, Nate. Yes, he said Rose Glass is St. Maud. So it was my bad eyesight.
Said Rose Glass is St. Maud.
No. So, you can imagine how surprised...
That's what we're accusing him of. Why are you apologising?
Let me break it down. You can imagine how surprised I was that Rose Glass is her St. Maud. So, like, if we were saying...
That's not proper grammar.
Like, if you were saying... you can imagine how surprised I was is that Rose Glass is... And I can't say... Hang on, let me try again. Rose Glasses,
it's
tube
apostrophe
of crab paste. You know, like...
It's apostrophe, you know, S.
Yes. That would have been way easier apostrophe if I just S. said apostrophe S rather than, well, the rambling that ensued. So there are a few bad ones, but they're not exactly awful compared to some we've read in the past.
Is there one more splodge?
There's a few, actually. I mean...
I don't know how anyone who likes films wouldn't like this film.
No, because I think even if it isn't quite up your street, I think you can appreciate the story, the visual effects, the characters. I do wonder.
What's the critics' consensus? Oh, you got another splodge.
Well, I've got one. Again, it's not awful. This is from efilmcritic.com, Peter Subshinsky. Probably got that wrong. Sorry, Peter. The problem is that while Rose Glass's glasses apostrophe
don't start mounting it. The problem is that while Rose Glass is Saint Maud.
Well, in this sentence, Rose Glass is screenplay. Does a good job. The problem is that while Rose Glass's screenplay does a good job of introducing and establishing its provocative premise over the first 20 minutes or so, it doesn't have much of a clear idea of where to go from that point. Again, though, it's not like they're saying it's shit. It's just, you know, didn't love it as much as some people. Right, let's see the critics' consensus.
Do you reckon Rose Glass is a real optimist with a name like that?
Oh, I was going to say, do you think it's her real name? Because I wondered whether that's a stage name.
Is her middle name tinted?
I really hope so. Critics' consensus. A brilliantly unsettling blend of body horror and psychological thriller, Saint Maud marks an impressive debut for writer-director Rose Glass.
Yeah, fully agree.
Yeah. No, I like that.
Thought it was a superb film. What are the user reviews?
Mm.
I bet the audience score will be about 83%.
No, actually, a lot less.
Really?
Yeah, 64%.
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought that might get a bit of a cult sort of following as such, but you know what I mean. So James S. says, worst film I've ever seen. No storyline. An embarrassing filmmaker's indulgence of nothingness. Right, okay.
What nonsense.
I know.
Like, obviously everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
We'll read a good one, shall we?
Yeah, definitely.
This is from Nicholas D. Saint Maud is an absolute masterpiece. Rose Glass did an excellent job with this movie. The script is well written. It was very disturbing. The camera work and cinematography were excellent. The cast did a phenomenal job, especially Morfydd Clark. The ending will also shock you. I didn't expect it.
Yeah, the ending certainly shocked me.
He carries on. Also, this is my favourite horror film, a must watch. And for the ones who give it 0.5 stars, you don't understand what horror is. If you like horror movies where a lot of things happen, please watch Evil Dead. So there we go.
To be fair, normally, I do like horror films, and indeed films in general, and actually just things in general, where a lot of things happen. That is... I wouldn't say I came away from St. Maud feeling like enough things hadn't happened.
Yes, I mean...
Stuff happens.
People die, come on!
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a sex scene, it's got a murder scene, you know, got a lot going on.
Yeah,
fight scene. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's got the whole
shebang.
It's even got a bit of black humour, actually. Just a bit of humour. Some of Maud's internal monologues were really quite funny.
Yeah. It definitely had a bit of cute charm to it as well. You know, with the relationship between Maud and Amanda. That was kind of quite sweet and funny. Yeah.
I mean, I say funny, I wasn't guffawing.
I mean, no, neither let's not over-egg it. But, you know, it was, it was sweet. Oh, I don't know. Some people are never happy, are they?
No, I know. No, yeah, I think 5-star. You know, I think I've been waiting for that film for so long to see it because there was that brief window where it was on at the cinema. And I didn't get to see it, you know, before we all got locked down again.
No, yeah, same.
And Cineworld shuttered itself. And I've been waiting for it for so long. I was almost a little bit fatalistic about it, thinking it's gonna be a bit disappointing just because I've wanted to see it for so long.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't at all. No. I just loved it. I loved it from the moment that scary soup bubbled into view.
Oh, yeah, you were loving that soup.
Yeah, I just thought, maybe it was because I was hungry when I was watching it.
You needed a pizza, that's what it is. Give Papa John's a call.
Yeah, maybe it was bubbling pizza sauce.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting hungry now.
Oh, have you seen any other horror films lately? We were going to start doing that section at the beginning, weren't we?
We were. No, do you know, I started, and this was over Christmas, watching quite a few of the Hammer Horror TV shows. Because do you remember we were going to pick one or a few and do that, which we haven't got round to yet.
Are you doing Hammer House of Horror?
Well,
was that the TV show?
Yeah, Hammer House of Horror. But then I'd also watched some of the Hammer Horror, although I've lost track of it as to where I am. I definitely haven't watched all of them on BritBox. But a few of those. Other than that, I don't know if I have. How about you?
I watched a really good short horror film by Lucy Rose.
Mm.
It's only 15 minutes long, but it's a really beautifully made short horror that has, you know, it just has the feel of a classic ghost story. It's got elements of The Woman in Black in there.
Oh, cool.
Really good. So that's something I was watching to review for Horrified magazine. And I've done a Q&A with her as well. So that'll be turning up on the website.
Brilliant.
I really enjoyed that, actually.
What's it called?
Short horrors. It's called... Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it helps if I say the name. It's called She Lives Alone.
Ah, sounds good.
Yeah. But the main character in that, a little bit of synchronicity, the main character in that is called Maud.
Ah.
So I think Maud is quite an auspicious name. And also there was a Maud in the Worst Witch, and that was very good as well. So it's obviously a lucky name.
Maud Moonshine.
So she... Well, do you know something? She was Maud Moonshine in the TV show.
Oh, was she not?
She's Maud Spellbody in the book.
What?
Maud Spellbody.
Maud Spellbody. Yeah. Well, there you go. You learn something new every day.
In the film with Fairuza Balk, they called her Maud Warlock.
Oh. God, I wonder why they changed it up so much.
Do you know how I know this? I went online to find some facts about Saint Maud that we could put in the show. I just went down a rabbit hole on The Worst Witch. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, what was Maud's name in The Worst Witch? And it was like the internet went, well, there's a story.
Let me tell you.
How long have you got? I used to love The Worst Witch. Right, well, I think clearly we've run out of things to say about Saint Maud. But yeah, I loved it.
I think we have. But yeah, solid film. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right, brilliant. Well, what are we going to watch next time, Han?
Oh, God, Joe, I haven't even thought. We could do a Hammer Horror, but clearly I keep dropping the ball with this because I haven't found one for us to watch. Maybe we need to have a think. Unless you've got anything that you're really keen to watch.
I don't, but you know, it's a while since we've done like a popular contemporary Hollywood horror.
That's true, actually.
Because we started off doing quite a few of them. And then we've sort of gone down this delightful rabbit hole of older,
more
and
unusual
obscure
ones.
British films, yeah.
I'm actually seeing, what is the most popular horror film?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Might be The Exorcist.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so I've got best horror films of all time on this list here. Exorcist is the first picture in it, obviously. But we've seen that one. Friday the 13th, seen that. Saw, seen that. The Orphanage, I've never heard of that, have you?
Okay, I'd be up for watching The Orphanage. If it's that highly regarded, neither of us has ever seen it.
To be fair, it is number 75 on the list. Maybe I should go the other way. Okay, so number one.
You started at the bottom of the list.
Well, it was the bottom was on the top. That's what threw me. See, they should have started with 75. I know.
You know, like those programs you get on Channel 4 sometimes, which is like the 100
like the
greatest
end of the year,
toys.
The 100 greatest films. But yeah, the 100 greatest biscuits at number 100. It's a custard cream. So,
can you imagine if they started with the best one and then the rest of the show was just diminishing returns?
Down. True. You make a good point. Okay, so number one is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I assume you've seen, cause so have I.
I haven't actually, but I'm not sure I fancy it.
Have you not? You should watch it at some point.
So this This is actually what I meant before when I said I love supernatural horror.
Ah, okay.
Like, so even when the supernatural isn't real, I like it when it's got a bit of a supernatural theme. Whereas I don't think the Texas Chainsaw Massacre will do.
No, it doesn't really.
All right, what's next?
Okay, so we've got that, then Exorcist, which we've seen. Number three is Psycho. Again, a great film, but I assume we've both seen that.
Do you know what? I haven't seen it either. But again, same.
Have you not? I mean, oh, that's a great film.
I'll have to watch it one day.
I'll have to watch it. I don't mind rewatching it because I haven't seen it in years and it is a great film. So that might be one for the list. I'm trying to find some more supernatural ones. Night of the Living Dead, Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. Have you seen those?
Don't think I have, you know.
Evil Dead. I have seen Evil Dead, but years ago. And that is really weird and certainly not, well, certainly quite supernatural. So that might be a good one.
So I think Evil Dead 2 was basically a remake of the first Evil Dead. You know, the same stuff happens. So we might be better off starting with Evil Dead 2. It might be better, I think. Fancy doing Evil Dead 2?
Let's do it.
Brilliant. Well, I really enjoyed that, Han. So thanks for coming online.
No, thank you. And good to be back together again, even though it's virtually, but, you know, in some form. Yeah.
And we'll see you all in a couple of weeks with our thoughts on Evil Dead 2.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. Tune in next time for more
Midweek Horror.
Don't get scared now.